Welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another section from Piglet, The Unexpected Story of a Deaf-Blind Pink Puppy and His Family, by Melissa Shapiro, veterinarian, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to begin today's readings with Piglet by Melissa Shapiro. In the previous chapter, we learned that all animals in the Shapiro home have jobs and all support each other perfectly well. And now we start Chapter 11, The Power of Pink. Summer 2018. The more I learned about the theories of growth mindset in general as being similar to the Shapiro rules, the more I appreciated how our kids and Warren wove in the ideas of accepting and understanding others for who they are and being willing to include them in your circle of friends, regardless of their differences. What was also woven into the framework, as it was with Piglet mindset, was self-acceptance, regardless of your differences. This was a concept I applied in several contexts in my life, but especially when it came to my competitive streak. In general, I compete with myself, but every now and then, even when I'm out to have a good time, I still find myself setting my sights on winning. That happened not long after Warren, the travel team, and I had our first pink party and met Tricia Fergo's students in Plainville, Massachusetts. There we decided on a last-minute whim to enter Piglet, Evie, Zoe in trick competition at the annual Westport Dog Festival. After two previous years of sitting at a booth and realizing it wasn't really the right venue for giving my veterinary talks, I'd opted not to go as an exhibitor. I still wanted to show for the community and the good causes that the festival benefited, so that's how I found myself registering Piggy and his sisters to compete the very next day. Just getting into the spirit surprised me. Somehow, having three kids out the door already in college, the real world, and being the dog mom to seven well-behaved dogs had not softened my intense competitive side. In spite of telling myself this was just a local dog tricks competition that I was participating in to give the dogs a fun experience, of course, thoughts of winning surfaced in my mind. I added a fresh element to our sit-stay routine and rushed out to buy Piglet a large, soft, hot pink towel to serve as his little stage and a plastic box that was about 6 inches high to be placed under the towel. It looked like a tiny throne for his pink majesty to sit on during the sequence of tricks. I also bought matching hot pink bandanas for the dogs to wear. When we arrived at the festival site of Winslow Park, I was impressed by the turnout of what Count later said was 2,400 people and over 1,000 dogs. The festival atmosphere was in full swing with vendors, food trucks, face painting, and other activity areas for children, plus signs directing spectators toward demonstration areas that mentioned demos for police dogs and guide dogs, plus frisbee catching and agility shows. The most competitive event was a preset obstacle course promising the fastest dog a full year's supply of dog food as a prize. When I signed us in and got our time, I saw that in addition to a category listed as Best Trick, there were other competitions for Best Tail Wagger, Best Dressed, Best Kisser, and Dog and Owner Look-Alike Contest. The panel of judges was composed of state and local officials. Warren and I chatted with friends and others who were there for the tricks competition. Just before it was our turn to head into the ring, he walked over to the side while I huddled up with my three dogs, Piggy, Zozo, and Evita, telling them, "Your turn is coming up. They're going to call our name soon. Let's do it." They all looked remarkably relaxed, but not me. I could feel a tinge of butterflies as I discreetly glanced over into the ring to check out the other dogs who were performing in front of the judges. It was the usual fare of very talented, well-trained dogs and their people, along with a few who hadn't been prepared but were simply there to participate. a herding dog who did an army crawl, a wiggly tail wagging puppy who wouldn't sit even for a treat, and a small dog who was part of a magic act that ended with the dog jumping into his mom's arms. At that point, seeing how much fun the others were having with their dogs, it hit me that my main goal was to make sure that my dogs and I enjoyed sharing their skillful adorableness with one another and with everyone who was watching. My dogs are not flawless, but even when they don't perform perfectly, their spirit is infectious. There was a large fenced area where each team of contenders would go in to do their tricks. The rest of us would watch outside the open entryway while we waited for our turn. Warren, now about 20 yards away from us, held up his phone. "You sure you trust me to video? You know I'm not that good at this." "You'll do fine," I encouraged him. Just in case, I asked a friend to record it for me on my phone. There are times when really Warren is the funniest person in the world, and he can make me laugh in the most intense moments. As I was probably getting too focused on how they would do, I paused for a quick smile when he sent me a go-get-em gesture of a thumbs up, followed by a sorry shrug toward his phone, implying he would not get a good video. I shrugged back and returned my attention to my three dogs, who were all set to go. With only a couple of contestants ahead of us, it felt like we were in the Super Bowl, as I hunkered down with the team, pumping them up and emphasizing to Evie and Zoe, "You are the stars in the Piglet show, and everyone is going to cheer for you." When I said everyone, I gestured to the 15 or so people who were near us, waiting for their turn. The judges weren't behind a table or anything, but actually on the ground next to the different acts. Something to know about Piglet is that he loves to do his tricks with other dogs in front of an audience. Warren and I were mystified early on by exactly how he knows there are people watching him. But he does. After a while, it became clear that Piglet not only knows he is in front of people, but he is also having an idea about how many people there are. His incredible nose can differentiate between a few and many people in his vicinity. In certain situations, Piglety will pull back and look uncomfortable. He can also sense the excitement in the air, whether we are in a classroom, at a presentation, or in this case, in a designated area for the tricks competition. Most of the time, the other dogs also rise to the occasion and do very well in front of their audience. In my own experience, when speaking in front of an audience, or working in a room, or at a stage of a game, live streaming on social media, I don't get nervous or have stage fright. For most of my life, that comfort and confidence has come from knowing the areas where I have expertise. There's nothing that I love more than talking about pet care, veterinary topics, dog training, animal rescue, adoption, pets with disabilities, animal welfare, etc., etc. From the time that Piglet entered our lives, I have learned and am still learning to express my own personal viewpoints in balanced ways, while maintaining authenticity when posting and commenting in all media. The power of pink motivated me to raise my game in the process and seize the many opportunities that Piglet's widening platform provided. He, meanwhile, gave me confidence somehow, maybe just by being a calming force, pushing me to make the most of every public appearance in order to have maximum impact for our cause. Though I was used to my dog's confidence, the tricks competition was a new experience of seeing all three, Piglet, Evie, Zoe, take it up to a higher level. They appeared to know that they were going on and going into the ring to perform the tricks that they had worked hard to perfect. It was ridiculous, but I felt a ripple of nerves as our turn finally came up. I went to set up our stage with the hot pink towel and the throne for Piggy Lee. The first part of the trick was a group to sit, stay, and come. After setting the dashing Piglet on his pedestal, Evie, all bright-eyed and with her white poodle terrier coat fluffy and clean, quickly took her place on the left side of Prince Charming. Zoe, Chocolate, Chihuahua, Yorkie, Maltese, Fluffy herself, pranced over to the right side with an extremely intense face that said, "I may look funny and cute, but this is a serious situation, folks." Scene stealer that she was, Zozo sat waiting for me to say something, her ears perked up and rotating like she was a visiting space dog. After they were in place, I said, "Wait," and gave Piglet his tap to reinforce what he was already doing. Then he stepped back about 10 feet, and the three waited attentively for me to call each of them by name. Off to the side, I could see Favorite Dad beaming with pride as the two girl dogs each came to their name when called, while Piglet waited for me to come get him with his tap signal. He performed perfectly with sweet enthusiasm. They were hams, hilarious and adorable, milking every moment. As I'd promised, the crowd cheered them on wildly. Next, I instructed them to go back to their stations and Zoe, sit. Evie, sit. And then brought Piglet back to his box and gave him his tap to sit. More applause followed, with lots of phones, cameras snapping away. We then did down with a short wait again, and while Zoe and Evie stayed in their down position, I called Piglet over with a tap under his chin so he could do an extra little trick by himself, and then finish with them all sitting together, which served as a photo op for everyone who was now curious about the tiny pink dog. As we left the competition ring, each was rewarded with extra treats for doing such an awesome job. After a few more entrants performed their tricks, there were some good ones with multi-dog acts. I watched the judges conferring briefly. Soon they went through a list of about 4 awards. Each time an award was announced, and the third prize! I would wait and then feel both disappointment and relief that our name hadn't been called. With each prize, except for the first having been called, I thought, well, this is it. And I held my breath until the winner was announced. This wasn't the Academy Awards, obviously. But when they said, "First prize," and I heard the names Piglet, Zoe, and Evie, I didn't hide the big smile on my face. I congratulated our 3-pack for winning first prize in the tricks competition. Along with the award, the 3 of them were given a prize of $25 and gift certificates to our local Earth Animal Pet Supply store. The day could not have been more perfect. We were able to mill about, greet friends, receive congratulations, and feel the warm embrace of being hometown champs. I met folks who were very interested in how I taught Piglet the tap signals, which led to some friendly conversation. All in all, it was much more satisfying dog festival experience than previous years had been. In talking about my experience of caring for Piglety, I tried to emphasize that you didn't have to be a vet to adopt a dog with disabilities because guidance from reliable sources was easily accessed through a variety of online and in-person sources. I spoke with one family who was interested in learning about how to work with more than one dog. I offered recommendations about making sure that when bringing dogs together, they were well matched in size, temperament, and activity level for optimizing success. It's not that the dogs have to be exactly the same. They need to complement one another and bring balance to the group. After hearing about our 7 dogs, a woman we met asked, "Who is the alpha dog in Piglet's pack?" Her husband leaned in, asking, "Is it you?" I laughed to think of myself that way. Warren jumped in and offered his insight. "There is no alpha in Piggy's pack. Our philosophy of dog training does not rely on dominant leaders." His answer was right on the money. Our dog group is particularly even in the distribution of roles, which emerge in different settings and situations. Before we left, I met a woman who approached me to say, "I follow Piglet on Facebook. Have you ever DNA tested him?" She happened to be starting a new job with a company that did DNA and medical testing for different breeds of dogs. This was another instance of kismet. I was fairly certain about Piglet's parentage, but the more science, the better, I figured. A short time later, she contacted me to arrange getting samples from Piglet and Gina for the company to use them in their research division. They were looking for dogs with a variety of abnormal genetics for their database. I submitted the samples, and the results came back as expected. Gina was Australian Shepherd Border Collie Mix, Piglet Doxy Chihuahua Mix. No surprise there. However, Annie was also tested, and she was truly an all-inclusive international dog. Chihuahua Poodle Mix with a little bit of Schnauzer, which is a terrier, and Pekingese mixed in. When we were driving home from the dog festival, I couldn't help crowing just a little bit. I had so much fun watching the three of them. That was great, I added. You were a good sport, I said to each of them. Warren joked, the fact that you had so much fun, it didn't even matter that I didn't have any fun. He became completely serious and said a few nice things about appreciating how I set the three dogs up to do their best and that I was in good form as the perfectionist that I was. It's really nice that you won. It was a nice reward for all the time I spent with the dogs. I'm pretty happy, I said, feeling about as happy as I can get. I wish that I could make you that happy, he said, with a straight face. I do too, I replied, paying along. Warren gave me a look, no comeback. So I said, yeah, I'll make a list. The joke was that I would make a list about ways he could make me happy. We had a good laugh as we shared our successful venture with Piglet and the girls. Next week, we'll read more about the adventures of Piglet and the girls in Piglet, the unexpected story of a deafblind pink puppy and his family, written by Melissa Shapiro, veterinarian. Our next reading comes from Breathe, Dogs, Cats, and Us, The Magic of Pets. And this particular article talks about how different phrases got named. Dogs are better than human beings because they know but do not tell, so said Emily Dickinson. Well, I'll be doggone. What's behind some of our everyday canine-themed words and phrases? Dog tired. There's tired and very tired, but beyond that, there's dog tired. First used in the 19th century, it's thought to refer to hunting hounds being completely exhausted after a very long chase. Dog-eared. If a page of a book is bent or folded at the corner in the shape of a dog's ear, it is said to be dog-eared. The phrase has been in use since the mid-17th century and has come also to be a general term for worn or in a poor condition. Hair of the dog. From the phrase hair of the dog that bit you, this is an alcohol drunk as a cure for a hangover. It dates back to the 16th century when the treatment for the bite of a mad dog was the application of some of its hair to the wound. Underdog. To be seen as unlikely to win a contest of some kind is to be the underdog. The word was first used to describe the animal beaten in the 19th century dogfight. In the poem of 1928 known as Canis Major, Robert Frost included both underdog and overdog. Barking up the wrong tree. You said to be doing this if you are looking for a reason or motivation in the wrong place. The phrase is thought to come from the 19th century America, when raccoons would trick hounds on the hunt into thinking they were up a certain tree and then make their escape. In the doghouse, where someone is said to be if they've done something that has upset others. This is a direct reference to banishing a badly behaved dog to its den outside. It gets a mention in J.M. Barrie's much-loved Peter Pan when Mr. Darling blames himself for his children being kidnapped. Downward dog. Almost certainly the most famous yoga pose in the world, the position resembles that of a stretching dog. The origin is uncertain, but it's thought to have been in use for centuries. Adho Mukha Savanasana in Sanskrit. It breaks down as Adho for down, face is Mukha, Savana is dog, and Asana is posture. Dog days. The name given to the hottest days of the summer is not directly canine related. Sirius is also known as the dog star, and it's the brightest star in the sky. The ancient Greeks believed that when it appeared to rise alongside the sun in late July, the combined heat gives us our dog days. This is not true, but it's a nice story. Puppy love, a phrase that described the attraction and feelings of affection felt by a young person to another. The behavior is thought to resemble the loyalty known and shown by a puppy dog toward its owner. The first recorded use appearance was in a Vermont newspaper in 1810. And finally, doggone. First used in the early 19th century, this slang term has nothing to do with dogs and is simply a garbled but polite way of saying God damn. Well, this article, it's titled, Well, I'll Be Doggone, comes from Breathe, Dogs, Cats, and Us. Some people are tempted to keep pigs, and here are some things to consider when you want to have a pig as a pet. Do your research. Regulations on keeping pigs vary around the world, and you might need a special license or government permit. Find a vet. It's useful to find a reputable large animal vet with the experience of dealing with pigs before you bring one home. Meet the parents. If you're taking on a piglet, and ask to see its parents. This gives you a chance to assess their behavior and the size that they will become. Think big. Even smaller breeds of pig can outgrow their owner's expectations in terms of size and weight. Make sure you would be able to cope with this and have enough space for a pig pet. Play the long game. Pigs can live for around 20 years if they're well cared for. Can you provide a long-term home for a pig? Make a home. Your pigs will need at least an acre of land to exercise and a secure pen or shed. They love to wallow in mud and enjoy grazing, so you need access to areas where they can do this. Consider the pig's need. Pigs are sociable and you'll need to spend time grooming and exercising them. Ideally, they are homed in pairs or groups. And adopt, don't shop. Contact your local large animal sanctuary or rescue center and see if they have any pigs that need rehoming. And finally, don't forget the piggy bank. Pigs aren't cheap animals to keep. They eat large amounts of food and need regular vet checks and worming. Veterinary treatment can be expensive. This tip on what to do if you have a pig as a pet is from the article Go the Whole Hog, and it is found in Breathe, Dogs, Cats, and Us. Some people like dogs, some like cats, some like pigs, and some like rabbits. And here are some superstitions and legends about rabbits. Several superstitions relating to hares exist in the United Kingdom. Some believe that meeting a hare is lucky, while others consider it a bad omen. In Cornwall, legend has it that a white hare appearing at sundown is either a warning of an incoming storm or the spirit of a broken-hearted woman haunting her cheating lover. And in Cambridgeshire, some reports suggest that a hare seen running through the streets is said to be a sign of an impending fire. Some fishermen and sailors consider hares so unlucky that they cannot be mentioned at sea or even while fishing. And there are people who believe that saying hare or hare, hare before falling asleep at the end of the month can prove lucky. Make a wish when seeing a hare, and it's likely to come true. Superstitions and legends about hares. And now we talk about horses, and these are the horses of Sable Island in Canada. Known for its wild landscape, Nova Scotia is a Canadian maritime province that never ceases to enthrall its admirers. No humans, though, are as familiar with its ruggedness as the horses of Sable Island. This 25-mile-wide National Park Reserve, situated in North Atlantic, is occupied by windswept dunes, grassy verges, and about 570 horses, which according to the island's acting park ecologist Sarah Meddell, have had a constant, if sometimes perilous, presence for centuries. The Sable Island horses are believed to be descendants of animals introduced in the 1700s. In the 1950s, the Canadian government planned to ship them to the mainland to work in coal mines or be killed for food or their hides. In 1961, a campaign to save the horses was successful after children across Canada sent drawings and letters to the government pleading for their protection. Today, says Sarah, Parks Canada works with different research groups from government, academia, and environmental nonprofit organizations to help monitor and understand the island's ecological health. The opportunity to observe wild animals as they go about their natural lives is a privilege. But along with the opportunity comes the responsibility to treat the wild animals with respect that they deserve and that they need. This is the Horses of Sable Island in Canada. We'll end with this story, which is about the signs of fall. For centuries, people have looked forward to the arrival of spring in times past. Being able to prepare for long, protracted winters could have meant the difference between life and death. It's for this reason that many traditions also look to the animal kingdom as fall arrives, in an attempt to predict what kind of winter hardships might lie ahead. According to folklore, if a squirrel builds its nest especially high in the tree, the colder months will be particularly harsh. Another legend has it that moles dig themselves deeper into the earth when severe weather is coming. They don't hibernate, so their burrows must be below the frost line to allow them to remain active all winter long. A burrow that drops to the depth of more than 27 inches is a prediction of freezing temperatures, whereas a drop of 12 inches means a milder condition is about to come. So that's how you can tell if you follow a squirrel or you follow a mole on their foraging and digging of their homes. This information all comes from Breathe, Dogs, Cats, and Us. Well, we've come to the end of Animal Companions for today. I hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.